than we promised. Today we're continuing on with the 8 forms of capital and learning how to cultivate a business rather than just establish a business and use these different forms of capital in that business as cultivation, and which is an interesting word to use because these 8 forms of capital come out of the world of permaculture. And today we're going to talk about the 7th of the 8 forms of capital, and this one is called cultural capital. And it's actually really an easy one to understand, but it's often undervalued by the business owner. The business owners don't generally spend a lot of time really focused on it, though some of the modern businesses do. If you look at Google, they've invested a lot in cultural capital, internal cultural capital. There's people that want to go work for Google, not just because it pays well, not just because it's a cool company, not just because there's a lot of cool stuff to do there as far as your job, but because of the internal culture of what it's actually like to work for Google. So it does seem that the more modern cutting-edge tech firms specifically get this concept, but it's present even in law firms and other accounting firms and things like that. It's just, does it get cultivated? Does it get utilized? Let's start out with the article from Appleseed Permaculture and what they say the concept of cultural capital is all about. So reading from their article, all the other forms of capital may be held and owned by individuals. I'm not so sure about that. But cultural capital can only be gathered by a community of people. Cultural capital describes the shared internal and external processes of a community. The works of art and theater, the songs that every child learns, the ability to come together in celebration of the harvest or for a religious holiday. Cultural capital cannot be gathered by individuals alone. It could be viewed as an emergent property of the complex system of inter-capital exchanges that takes place in a village, a city, a bioregion, or a nation. What they're saying is, like, your little village might have a culture. If we go to my little town that I grew up in Pennsylvania, Pottsville was part of it. But where my grandparents were is really where I spent more time, in Minersville. There's a mining culture in Minersville. There's a Ukrainian culture in Minersville. There's Lithuanian culture. And those two cultures, while different, have a lot of similarities. There's an Irish culture there. And all of those cultures together have a very strong community, social interactions, churches and things like that. And they produce stuff like, yes, artwork and cooking and things. And these are all part of a culture. And that's usually what people think of when they think of a culture. But you notice it says a village, a city, a bioregion, or a nation. They're limiting what they're saying here to physical places, which is just not really a good way to look at things anymore, because we have things online now which make national and state boundaries almost meaningless when it comes to culture. The other thing that got left out is business. Because, see, businesses can have a culture. Businesses definitely have a culture. If you go into a business and you look at their internal culture, there's a lot of value there. Like I said, there's people who want to go work for Google mainly because of the culture, what it's like to actually be an employee there. There's the culture in Microsoft. It's not the hip, trendy thing that it used to be. But when Microsoft really was coming up in the 80s, it was a big deal. Today it's a big deal because it's a big company and good benefits. And there's still a pretty cool culture there. But, man, in the 80s, it was a groundbreaking. There was no company that was like that. So internal cultures of a business we can see. We can see it in things like you get a small company, other people have birthday parties. They celebrate here. That's a cultural phenomenon. They're bound by the community that they all work there. We can also see things in a business that show us internal culture in language. Language is one of the key indicators that there is a culture. A true culture has its own language. And if you go into most companies, especially where people have been working together for a long time, you'll hear a unique language. You'll hear them use things like, and sometimes it's mundane stuff, like an internal name for a form, right? You know, like, give me a D75. Well, no one outside of that company would know what the hell a D75 is. A D75 to me sounds like a bulldozer that's like halfway between a D7 and a D8. I don't know what a D75 is. It's fictitious. I made it up. I understand. But, you know, there's still that type of thing. But there's bigger things like, you know, what somebody means by big fish. Big fish in sales means one thing, you know, but maybe a big fish inside the company means something else. I don't know. Because it's not my company, it's not my culture. And a business grown properly will have a community around it. that's not in the business, that's an extension of the business. We've already talked about this with things like social capital and building communities. Your Facebook fans, your listeners, your readers, your customers, they're a community as well. And if we look at things like 5 minutes with Jack, all of a sudden I start getting emails from people, right, to say I love FM WJ, and the W is lowercase, and the FM and the J are uppercase. And all of a sudden we have FMJ, FMWJ, right? And that's, and all of a sudden it starts getting used on a forum, and the community, I didn't come up with that. I didn't tell anybody to do that. You guys did it on your own. Because we started to build this community, road to 100K, RT100K is starting to be used. And if you sent that to somebody who didn't know about it, they wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about. It's not like saying left or right or center. It's a unique phenomenon. And when you're building a business and community right, that's one of the ways you can tell that a culture's developing around your business. And that's one of the, that is key here. It's not owned by you. It's not owned by the company or the individual. It's owned by all of the members that choose to be part of the community, so it will evolve without you. If it doesn't evolve without you, it's not real. You're faking it till you make it, so to speak. So it's very, very good when people start to give names to things. And smart companies, they just like throw it right into their brand, right? They don't try to tell, you know, stupid companies try to tell the market what their brand is. We look at Volvo. When Volvo first started really aggressively marketing their product, they didn't come out and say, we're a safe vehicle. But after all of the crash reports came in and people bought it, people felt the quality of the car, especially at the time before everybody was in the safety world, right? When safety was, you know, safety was, it's a big car. I mean, you got to go way back here to understand where Volvo came in with the safety moniker. And the market started saying, we buy you because you're safe. That culture of safety consciousness sprung up around Volvo along with reliability. Well, Volvo, being run by intelligent people, said, yep, we're the safest vehicle on the road. Now, see, instead of trying to say, no, we're cool, or no, we're sporty, or no, we're, you know, whatever, they took the culture that was built around their product and they decided to engage with it and embrace it. And that's a big lesson, especially for internet entrepreneurs. There's a lot of people out there that as they start to build a business, and this is really true with larger companies, and when I say larger, I mean, you know, several million dollars a year and up, with a few employees or more, and more of a traditional environment. Everybody goes to the office, that type of thing. And frankly, it's part of why I got tired of consulting, because you work so hard to build up a brand and the recognition and the value and the interrelationships for a company. And then the audience that the company has, because even if you're not a producer of content the way that we are, your customers, if they're paying attention, they're your audience. That's another thing to learn from this, right? So even if you're not putting out blog posts every day or stuff like that, but you're putting out news and information and product and interacting, if your customers have their eyes on you, you have an audience. So the audience, the community around there, starts to do things with the company's brand and name on its own. Now, I don't mean like when people are stealing. That's not what I'm talking about. That is a trademark issue. So I've had people like all of a sudden decide they're just going to use my logo on their product. No, that's intellectual property issues. But what they'll do is they'll give something a name. They'll start calling it something. And the branding person, the marketing person, this is a disaster. We're not XYZ. We're ZYX. No, shut up. You are whatever your customers say you are. They're developing a culture around you. Be part of it. But no, they want to fight it. So that's what like the big lesson today is, don't fight when somebody out there starts to do things, as long as they're not misrepresenting you or claiming you and saying like, you know, we are the same thing when they're not. Though it's not a competitor misappropriating your IPR. We're talking about your actual engaged customers and community members that are doing things like, okay, for Survival Podcast on our forum, we have the TSP. Which is, again, a cultural thing, right? TSP has become the moniker for Survival Podcast. If you walk up to somebody and say, TSP, they're like, a teaspoon? They don't know what the hell you're talking about. But if they're another listener, they would immediately go, oh, that. Oh, cool, you listen to that, right? So the TSP Black Rifle Club, it was just signified by little badges. Now, I didn't do that. Community did it. The TSP Ham Radio Club. Right? Black Rifle Club are people that are, you know, big into the ARs and things like that. right? So these little sub-communities that are part of the overall community start to build up, and you start to get this cultural capital. They put together these beautiful, creative things on their own. And then that is actually so valuable, because to the onlooker, somebody that comes in and sees that, they know very well that the company didn't create that. When you try to fake it, they know you're bullshitting too, and they don't appreciate it. But the casual observer today is not quite so casual anymore. And when they come to a Facebook fan page or a company's forum or something like that, and it's not just like the same five boring FAQ questions answered the same way over and over again, there's actually people engaging and exchanging information and creating things and talking to each other, you know, and communicating with each other, and the brand has an affinity for them, and they're developing their own communities and sub-communities around that, well, that is very attractive, because you don't see it every day. You can go to 1,000 websites today. You'll find 10 out of 1,000, if you're lucky, somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 0.1%, that have real community built around them, real cultural capital built around them. And just like people want to go work for, you know, Google because it's got a cool corporate culture, people want to be associated with brands that have a cool community culture around them. And they want to create things too, and they want to interact, and they want to be part of something because it's special, because it has value. It has value. Now, remember, our litmus test, is it capital? Is cultural capital inside a company capital? Can it be converted to other forms of capital? Well, it certainly, just in what we just talked about, has the ability to be converted into social capital. The culture itself will attract others that increase the reach, and thereby that gives you social capital. We already know we can turn social capital into financial capital. So even in a roundabout way, we can take cultural capital to social capital to financial capital. But then you'll get some stupid-ass executive going, what's the ROI on cultural capital? This just doesn't sound like it's worth investing in for our company. And that's why you're going out of business. Because this is becoming the dominant form of capital that you need to have alongside social capital. Social capital of the company at the brand level, and the key players in the company that make people want to be affiliated with them, and then a cultural form of capital that develops internally and externally around the organization based on its community. Those are how everything's getting done today. And the stupid-ass big companies do not get this stuff yet. They're certainly not teaching this at a high level in marketing courses in college. They're paying a little bit of lip service to it now. Now, let me tell you what's going to happen. Within 5 or 10 years, probably 5, this is going to be a big deal. They'll catch on to it 5 years down the road the way they caught on to things like Facebook and YouTube 5 years down the road. 5 years ago, when I went and told people, hey, look, you need a presence on Facebook, and you need a presence on YouTube, and you need a Twitter account, they were like, okay with setting it up, but nobody actually wanted to do it. Nobody saw any value in it. People asked stupid questions like, well, what's the ROI on a Facebook friend? You know, Gary Vaynerchuk would say, what's the ROI on your mom, ass clown? Right? What's the ROI on a relationship? But now some of these same companies are big enough, they put catalogs out that I used to work with, right? And I'll get a catalog in the mail and go, oh, they were an old client. And I look on the back and there's a little chicklet, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. They'll grasp this true value of social and cultural capital and these other forms of capital, this community capital, but they'll grasp it long after the ship has kind of sailed, and little guys like us have already reached, and they'll go, how do we get into this? They'll ask questions like the same type of questions my partners and clients would ask. Why does this little kid over here have all this influence and we can't get any? Because he understands it, fool. He's not faking it. He's genuine. He's genuine. And when somebody comes to his site and says something and it's not quite the way he would have phrased it, he doesn't try to like fight it. He embraces it. He takes the energy that's already there and channels it because he's just excited that somebody's paying attention. And there's so much value to that, and it can build so much capital. All 8 forms can stem from the cultural concept that you build around your business. And people say, well, it won't pay the bills, but actually it does. It's the cultural and social capital that don't pay the bills immediately. They're your long-term dividend returns. They're what make the business sustainable. And if you're cultivating something, you want it to be sustainable. And there's nothing in the world that I want to be as sustainable as my business. With that, this has been another episode of 5 Minutes with Jack.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of 5 Minutes with Jack. To learn more, connect with our community, and get free resources to build your business, visit jackspirico.com.